Pickaxe.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, my friend. My name's Sean, and I want to end your suffering. No, not like that. With meditation in my new podcast, Mindfulness for Gamers. Each episode, I'll take you through how mindfulness can help you to feel less anxious and frustrated and put you on a path of happiness, all through the lovely, grimy lens of video games. So make time to level up your mental health and take the first step on your spiritual skill tree. Join me and subscribe to Mindfulness for Gamers right here, right now.
And welcome back to the Review of Death, a Doctor Who podcast and your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I'm Matthew Toffolo. I'm joined as ever by Billy Garrett John. And we're also joined by my brother, Jonathan.
Yay!
For the Horror of Fang Rock.
Good morning. Oh, let's get in there. This is a review that's like 10 years in the making.
Yeah.
I think so. We've discussed it before, haven't we?
Yeah, This has been a long time coming indeed. But it feels fitting to do it now, when the Blu-ray of season 15 is about to come out in the next week or two. I'm sure in an upcoming episode, we'll probably briefly talk about what the new CGI looks like. But obviously, we didn't watch it with the new CGI because it's not out yet. But we did watch the episode because I can't really remember what the deal was with us talking about this
one. I think I said that I was like, a bit, I don't know about Horror Fang Rock.
And Johnny was like, remark, and I
let
was
me
not
fight
happy.
You right now on this spot.
Yes, basically, that was the idea, that was a while ago. That was years ago.
It was a long time ago.
I think that was around the time when we first started doing Review of Death just as YouTube videos, wasn't it?
Yeah, long time ago.
But probably about 10 years, God, crazy. Has there been any news? I don't really follow the news anymore.
No,
it's too depressing. But in the world of Doctor Who news, so I have to ask anything interesting in DWM because we don't get that down here, or I'm too lazy to get it for myself here.
It's rubbish, don't bother.
Yeah, I mean, I've
Matt's given up.
I've given
really?
Up hope on this program now.
No.
I'm still getting it.
Just about.
I was saying last night, I was like, this opening episode for this new series,
It's
going to have the same impact as the Star Beast had for me to really get into this, because I feel so down about the whole thing after Christmas.
Wow.
It really did. It really just knocked the love out of me. I was
not
just like,
the lowest you've ever been, right?
No. I don't know. It was really, I think because
the
we
end
had
of the
such
review
a high,
of death is nigh. We won't even make it to 10 years. Fucking hell.
Nah, we've got plenty to talk about. No, I mean, I think the thing is, it was just that the anniversaries were so good.
Yeah, they were great, weren't they?
And I enjoyed them so much. Mm. And, you know, the giggle ended weirdly. And I was like, okay. And I thought, well, we still got the first one with Shooty. And I was just so underwhelmed by the whole thing. That it has really just made me think, like, I'm really worried about where this is going, you know? Mm. I mean, at least with the Jodie Whittaker ones, it was just crap. At least I thought, anyway.
Sorry. <same. laughs>
sorry to you series 11 to 13 enjoyers out there.
I accept your apology.
But, I mean, even I have said, you know, those series did improve in places, and when they had different writers come in, and I think she got better as she went on. So I don't know, but I just, at the moment, I just feel a bit like, oof, and I'm not really feeling him as the Doctor yet. I need to see some more. I really think that having the Christmas special and then having this big gap to the new series was probably the worst thing that could have happened, because I know obviously the plan wasn't for that to be the case. They wanted it to be in January, and I just think, this cocked them, at least for people like me.
This is marvelous. So, look, we're only four episodes in for a start, and the first three of this new era were really good, and we all really liked them. and then you have one Christmas Day episode and you're turning heel on the entire program. This is like listening to a football club podcast with people going, well, yeah, we had like three really good results, but then City got beaten by Cardiff on the weekend and now we want Liam Manning out of Bristol City. It's like, this is like listening to football fans moan about supporting their club. It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's just, we're all cut from the same cloth. As much as football fans may not like to think it, we are all cut from the same cloth when we're fans.
Honestly, you could just replace, you know, replace Chibnall and replace blah, blah, blah with all these different managers' names and different players who aren't pulling their weight. And I'm still not feeling Gatwa up front. I think he's got a little bit more to give. I want him to show me something different. It's like, honestly.
Yeah. Don't like the new kit. The new kit's not as good as the old one.
Nah, not as sexy. Johnny, how do you feel? Are you also imploding?
Basically, yes. I just kept quiet because I thought I'd let Matt speak on my behalf as well. I mean, yeah, I didn't like that Christmas one at all. I only watched it the once, and that was enough. I mean, Matt watched it again, obviously, for your review, but I said I just can't. I found it very underwhelming, you know, for various reasons, which you've already spoken about in your review before, so I'm not going to bore people again. But let's see what, at the moment, I just don't see him as the Doctor. That's my thing. I just can't. He's a very good actor, and I liked him in Sex Education. He was great in that, but I don't know. I just can't see him at the moment in that role. He just didn't do it for me. But maybe he'll, warm to the role, perhaps, you know, and show another side of it. But at the moment, I was just like, oh, I don't know. I didn't buy it, really, in that first one.
I just didn't think the story was really...
And the story wasn't very good. It was crap.
It didn't really allow him to have those multiple facets of the character, I guess.
I'd like to, of course, remind you guys and our listeners who are all probably thinking it as well, we've had 40 minutes of screen time of Shooty Gatwa. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've barely seen any of him. But I understand you guys feeling a little bit like deflated about it because of that episode in particular. But I don't know. I'm still on board the Gatwa train.
Okay. Well, we'll find out in May, in May the new series starts.
Mm. Exciting. Yeah.
It might
be
a good thing that I'm going to Brazil.
I was going to say, so we're now hearing 25th of May, apparently, is when the new series is going to start. And that means...
Oh, that's just after Mochilu's birthday. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks,
Johnny. I'll remember it in
everybody knows that now. Do you want to share share the third question to access your bank account?
Yeah, I've got a present for my son the day before.
So there you go. That might happen. Matt might miss the finales in Brazil, but he'll be in Brazil.
It's all right. We'll get it on Disney Plus. I'll get the Disney Plus experience.
You'll be able to join me in the Disney Plus realm.
Ooh, it feels dirty.
It does feel dirty, I have to say. Little bit of news. I've got Death in Paradise star Genesis Liana has been cast in series 14. Karen Gillan.
Oh, okay. I was like, what the fuck? Have we changed podcasts or something? Death in Paradise?
Who watches that? Karen Gillan, Jenna Coleman, and Stephen Moffat were spotted partying with a little bit of red wine, which looked like a laugh.
Oh, yeah.
And the season 15 collection set is out on the 18th of March. Hooray.
Oh. 2 days after our mother's birthday. There we go.
There we go, everybody. Mark all these down on your calendars at home, please. Please. No release date yet for the Celestial Toymaker animation, but that was just previewed at the BFI. People seem to like it.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I saw a few pictures and it looked quite good. They did some cool things. Like they had like the Toymaker was huge and like the board game of, all the main characters were, they were little and stuff. It was it was cleverly done. I think they've put a lot of thought into how can we make this not feel like hopscotching around a studio for 25 minutes at a time. So that's good.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
When does that come out?
Not sure yet.
Okay. No, it hasn't got a release date. People are saying sometime in March. But I was seeing, talking of release and delivery, that apparently it was only delivered to the BFI the night before the screening.
Yes, that is true. We'd heard that during the week.
God.
It still wasn't finished yet. And we were like, oh, bloody hell. But I think that's just the way these releases work. You know, I think they're so up against it, trying to get them out there. But man, that is pressure, isn't it? To think, right, you've got to get this done for a massive screening with all these nerds.
Yeah, I'd definitely resent Doctor Who fans if that was me as an animator doing crunch time, knowing,
yeah,
who are these people? I don't care who these people. The BFI, where's that? You know. But that's exciting.
But there's probably a frame that just comes up very quickly, which says, yeah, "Enjoy, sad bastards."
enjoy paying £8 for a pint at the bar because you're in London.
I've heard it's very expensive.
Down point of the BFI screenings, but they are good fun. Right.
You should just chew your tongue if you're thirsty.
If I'm thirsty, I will chew my tongue.
Just
Thank you, Johnny.
Yeah, everybody, save a few quid.
Everybody in the BFI at the next screening is going to be looking very odd, chewing their tongues. Or it's the BFI. People might be chewing each other's tongues. You never know. Horror of Fang Rock. Let's talk about that. Exciting.
Yes.
We've been meaning to do this for a really long time. It's a UK TV Gold staple for me. I very much have this in mind appearing on UK Gold. And I don't think I've really watched it a lot after watching it today. I was like, I've definitely seen it, but it's a bit of that Wizard of Oz thing. You know, have I watched it all the way through? I'm sure I have.
Okay.
But really? Wow.
Yeah, I know. Terrible.
That's insane. Wow. That does seem crazy to me.
Outing myself as not being a Doctor Who fan here.
God.
So let's start with where you guys are at and why we were going to do this to begin with. It was because there was a lot of love for this story on your behalf and a bit of kind of ambivalence on mine.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching it for the first time when it came out on BBC Video.
Yeah. How old were you been then?
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, that was...
Little.
Yeah. That was either very late 90s or early 2000s, possibly late 90s.
Yeah, it probably was that
so,
one, I think.
Yeah. I was only a wee bab. But I mean, I loved it. I just thought it was great because it's just dripping with atmosphere away from the opening shot. It is. I mean, it's Paddy Russell directing it, which you already know.
You're in safe hands. Yeah,
you're in for something good. And there's obviously now that we know through all the special features and all the things written about it, we know there was all this tension between her and Tom Baker, with Tom being an asshole and Tom Baker not getting on with anyone and all this kind of stuff. And
Tom is absolutely brilliant in this story.
Oh, yeah, isn't he?
He's amazing.
That
adds to it. I think the fact that he's obviously in one of his moods.
He is so good.
It gives him this sort of alien ambivalence to the character. Yeah. And it's brilliant. It all works.
Yeah. I was watching it and I thought, this is early for him to be in pissed off Tom Baker mode. You know, where he just looks like, I've checked out of this script. I've checked out of this production. I'm thinking about how many I'm going to sink once that clock goes to 6 o'clock or whatever. and you see it on his face in the story, but he's acting through it, which he doesn't really do later on, you know, and he's really buying into it. There's kind of peaks and troughs, but he knows when there's a moment of a dialogue or something, or he's going to have a bit of exposition with Vince or Ruben or Leela or whatever, is a bit more kind of pep to his performance, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, there are moments where he really sort of sparkles, like particularly at the start.
Go on.
When he first encounters Ruben. And, you know, Ruben's talking all about the Beast of Fang Rock and, you know, Tom
he's playing with him, isn't he?
Yeah, he's
very
being
good.
Very cheeky. And he's
great.
Like, oh, you know, I know this man is, you know, a bit of a Luddite and, you know, he's very superstitious. And he's like, oh, I know he thinks that we're spies or, you know, is all that sort of stuff.
Conspiracy thing.
And he really plays with that. And it's just the little cheeky little smiles that he gives.
Yeah, he does loads of those. And the comedy moments in it are great as well. Yeah. You know, the little throwaway lines he says about, you know, we're all going to be dead in the morning, and smiles, that lovely grin.
Yeah,
great.
So good. But he knows when to get serious. Because I noticed in that scene with Ruben, you know, he's been mucking around with the bowler hat, which is a good look,
I think, for
Tom. It looks great. He's been mucking around with the bowler hat. He's got the bowler hat on. And he's talking about all this stuff with Ruben. And then as soon as it needs to get serious, that comes off.
Mm.
And it's like, as he takes the hat off, the larking about is over, And I think it's a story that really puts the Doctor through his paces in terms of, like, how, you know, I'm trying to keep everyone alive here, but no matter what I seem to do,
it's not working.
Everyone is dying.
Yeah.
And, you know, particularly at the start of part four, after he finds Ruben's body in the coal shed.
And realises he's cocked up.
Yeah, he has a real moment where he puts his hands.
So good.
His hands. And he sort of, like that. And you can tell he's like, oh, shit. You know, he's like, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
I can't be bloody lighthouses. No.
This is a really, really nice way of looking at it. Because hearing you talking about Tom's performance and all of that, it kind of put me in mind of the way Silv plays a lot of stuff later down the line with that whole...
Yeah.
There is a bit of a sense he's playing chess, like without them all knowing, you know? And that line of, by morning we might all be dead, and obviously delivered with a nice big smile, which is fabulous.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is what ends up happening. I mean, every character besides the principal cast died.
Yeah.
So
It's crazy.
Do you think he got there, he was like, this is going to end badly, and he just knew everyone's a goner, a bit like kind of Seventh Doctor. I'm acting like I don't know what's going on, but really I know how grave this situation is.
I mean obviously all of the characters, with the exception of, I think,
what's her face,
Vince, they've all got their sort of issues. Do you know what I mean? They're all morally ambiguous.
They are,
You know, I mean, Ruben's fine, but obviously he's not particularly trustworthy. He doesn't trust other people, and, you know, he's got this real thing against modern technology. And then, of course, you've got...
the boss's name about his honour, isn't it? He doesn't want his honour to be...
Skincell is all worried about his honour to the point that he will jeopardise everybody else's safety. Life. And, you know, he dies for greed
at the end,
the diamonds at the end. And then the other guy, whose name
Lord
escapes...
Lord Farquaad.
Parmadel. Lord Parmesan.
He's an asshole, isn't he?
He's an asshole, and, you know, and a greedy asshole at that. And then what's her face? Adelaide.
Adelaide.
She's just a...
a moany old cow, basically. I love the bit when Leela slaps around the face. It's so good,
that bit is
amazing.
And
when my kids watch that story, rewind that. Yeah, okay. Very good. It's done so well. It's great. Oh, it's super.
My favorite
and by the way, Leela is brilliant in this story.
I think
Louise Jameson is so good.
Yeah.
She's
really got the character, hasn't she? Oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
So
Terrence
nice to
Dix
see
knew
her.
Knew how to write for
She
for
did.
Leela.
He knew what an actor he had on his hands with Louise Jameson.
Yeah.
Like, she can do way more than what they're giving her or whatever.
Nice to see her
outside of the animal skins as well.
Yeah. And I think probably Terrence thought, oh, this is a very different type of companion to the ones that I've written for in the past, you know?
Definitely.
Maybe with the exception of Jamie, but it feels like he really enjoyed writing for her and sort of really sunk his teeth into the, you know, the elements of her. There's this sort of real thing that I noticed watching this one, which is like this idea that, like, the primal senses are better than technology.
Yeah.
Because Leela always knows when the Rutan's near. She can sense the cold because of her heightened senses. Mm. And there's a bit where Adelaide says about, oh, I should have listened to Miss Nevercott, my astrologer, because she said,
it would be bad luck if I come here.
Yeah.
And there is this idea of, like, you know, listen to your gut, listen to those feelings, you know.
But
Leela
shoots
her
down,
in anything else.
Which is interesting, because there is that balance of, like, you know, yes, I like the Doctor absolutely knowing when she says, oh, I didn't see anybody on the rocks, or at the start when they're trying to figure out where Ben's gone. And the Doctor is the first one that kind of clocks her and goes, right, something's wrong, and goes down into the generator room. But then she has that conversation with Adelaide, and she's like, you know, astrology's bollocks. You know, you need to believe in science.
Yeah. Well, she compares it to a shaman, doesn't she? She says she knows.
Yes.
She says, oh, the doctor's shown me
which
science.
Which is a really, really lovely touch. But, like, Leela is starting to side with rationality over blunt force or, you know, tribalism or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
On Adelaide as well, the slap is fantastic, but my favourite bit is when she comes downstairs, and I think it's Ruben's body or somebody else's. She goes down to the generator room And she starts screaming, and then Tom turns and goes, "Get her out of here!
Get her out of here!" Yeah.
Fuck off.
Off she goes.
Brilliant. Yeah. Fucking wind up. So that's brilliant. On the diamonds, you were talking about the skin sale, everybody kind of succumbing to their greed or because they've got demons and all that sort of stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
When the doctor gathers the diamonds, he knows where the Rutan is. He knows the Rutan is sort of round the corner of that staircase.
Yeah.
The way he drops the diamonds is almost like he's feeding skin sale to the Rutan. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think so, but Annie thought that. But I didn't. I've never sort of interpreted it that way.
Yeah,
like, I just think he thinks that's what I want. Chuck it down.
At the very
and then
least,
off he goes.
Yeah. At the very least, though, he inadvertently kills him. Could we all argue manslaughter?
Says, I mean, Annie sort of said it's almost like the doctor's testing him.
Yes.
Like, you know,
and he's failed. And I think that distances the doctor enough from being directly responsible for this guy dying.
Yes.
But, you know, I did think, that's a bit dark.
It is a bit dark.
Yeah, I don't see it like that.
I think you could look at it both ways. You know, I think if you wanted to feel like, no, the doctor's got more of a moral compass than that, you can say, oh, you know, he's just done that very doctory thing where he's like, I do not care for, you know,
material possessions. So this is what I need, bye. And I think off he goes.
But I then think if you wanted to say, well, the doctor is a morally ambiguous character, then, you know, maybe he is in that, in one of his moods. And he's just like, I wonder if I can see if this old bastard will get eaten by a green blob.
Either way, that he'd get off with diminished responsibility because they take one look at him and go, this guy is not in the room. This guy's a nutcase. And it's nice that that gets referenced by one of the shipwrecked cast members. They sort of say, look at his eyes. He's clearly gone. And I'm sort of thinking, is that ad-libbed because Tom's had a couple? Or is that actually in the script?
Maybe that's what was happening. Maybe it's Tom trying to kill them all off so he can get to the bar first.
Yeah, this wasn't in the script. Yeah. It was improv.
It's just improvisation. You know?
Just nudging people down the staircase and dropping sandbags on them. I mean, I love that this has been a love-in for the story so far because as I said earlier, was never overly fond of it and don't have very strong memories or feelings towards it. You know, like when I said UK TV Gold, I literally mean glancing at it and seeing the Rutan coming up the stairs or whatever. But actually sitting down and appreciating it in the way that I do when I watch Doctor Who now, because we talk about it kind of in depth and you've got to look for these things. I loved this. And it was so much fun to go back and watch an episode that I hadn't seen for such a long time and just get to appreciate it all over again.
I was saying to Matt, it's a very well cast episode as well.
Mm-hmm.
All the characters are great. They all take their roles very seriously, you know, and they are very convincing. And I think that's obviously helped. And also Dudley Simpson's score is great, I think, in this case as well. Yeah.
He's still got a couple of ideas up his sleeve. You know, I'm not saying that he totally drops the ball, but there's a couple of things that happen here that you don't hear in other Doctor Who stories. Like certain use of the piano, I think, in there was quite interesting.
Yeah. Really good. And I think Radiophonic Workshop with the sound design, like the sound design for the root and that,
noise
is great, good. And all of the POV shots and all that stuff from Paddy is great, you know. It really works and it makes it feel like
it does.
There is this thing coming for you and it's slowly coming in. It's very clever, very good.
And for the most part, from a production perspective, you mentioned convincing Johnny when it came to the performances of the cast, but it's a BBC costume drama. So on that side of things, the production is always going to be great and it looks great from that perspective. Mm. But also because it's based under siege and it's kind of minimalist and you're confined to a small set or a series of sets, it means there's not an awful lot of visual effects going on. There's not an awful lot of crazy CG. So it actually still stands up quite well. When you look at the CSO out on the lamp gallery, that all still looks fine, generally.
Mm, yeah.
And the Rutan only really appears in part four. So it's like they saved all the money for the POV shots.
Yeah,
and, you know, you're fine. And some of the model stuff's quite nice.
Yeah, some of the model stuff's quite nice. I mean, I'm not keen on the boat.
So the boat crumpling feels a bit into the rocks. But,
it's not a great cliffhanger, that one.
No, but they build, don't they, those cliffhangers?
Yeah, they do.
The end of part two, which is when we hear, is that when we hear Ruben's...
Ruben has an orgasm in the generator room. He kind of goes,
And that's when he says,
yeah, it's so good. It's so scary.
Yeah.
It's frightening.
I don't know. It made me laugh.
Yeah. It's great.
It sounded like he was climaxing to me.
Oh, no, no. It's scary. I think it's frightening. That's number two. Then end of part three.
I mean, Ruben climaxing is pretty frightening, to be
And then part three, he says, is Tom.
Oh, yeah. Part
again,
three is
finding the real body.
Yeah. Yes. You know, I've locked the enemy out, so I locked it in with us. That's so good. That is a brilliant.
It's a
and you know, there's no music underneath.
No.
It's just Tom, and it's just like, oh shit, he's gone.
A very grave moment.
Right, yes, excellent. Mm. Very, very good. Very good.
Obviously, it's a Terrence Dix joint, so it's a well constructed four parter. He doesn't, you know, nobody does them better than Terrence.
No,
and it is like a perfection of that form of storytelling where he's introduced the shipwreck characters at just the right time, you know, for it to not get boring. Like it picks up in the right way. And then suddenly you've had the location established. You've had this oncoming threat established. Well, let's focus on what's going on inside the lighthouse. And if it was just the Doctor, Vince, Leela, Ruben and the Rutan, it would have a, you know, significantly smaller budget, which would be great for them. But it would be so boring. So thank God that they come along.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It really... heightens things up, doesn't it? And it makes it all the more interesting. And, you know, going back to things like on the production side with the, you know, the way that the story looks in terms of the design of the lighthouse, you know, you feel like you're in a proper lighthouse.
I thought it was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I thought it was I didn't realise it was a set. Amazing.
And the lighting, it's all really well done. I mean, it was interesting on the new, on the Blu-ray, you know, you've got, there's a special feature of the making of Horrifying Rock, and they've created a CGI layout of the studio. So you can see how the studio is laid out with each individual room next to each other. And it's so weird looking at it like that and thinking, no, it's not
cohesive.
Stacked, you know, it's an actual lighthouse. Don't messing with my brain. But yeah, ever so good. Mm. Very, very good. Very, very clever.
Yeah.
How it was all directed.
Very good. We should talk about sort of the production-y side of things just around Doctor Who at this point, because this marks a really dramatic sea change in the change of production. You know, Philip Hinchcliffe is out. He's now working on Target. He's swapped out with Graham Williams, who's now come in. And this isn't a hangover from a previous season, this story. This isn't a script that was commissioned by Philip Hinchcliffe, as far as we're aware. This was the first story commissioned by Williams. So... what do we think? Because this is the last hurrah.
Very different to his latter stuff, isn't it?
It's
bizarre, really, when you think about it. Yeah, when you compare it to, with the exception of Image of the Fendal, when you compare it to everything that follows, it is, it does feel like this should have been in the previous season, which is nice in a way, because it just feels like that aspect of the series is just like trickling away.
Yes.
But, yeah, it is odd and, you know, quite ironic, really, that the series was coming under fire for being too violent and too scary. And then suddenly everyone
dies
in this story. You know, you've got people being electrocuted. You've got people falling off the top of lighthouses.
You've got the Rutan dissecting someone so they can figure out the human anatomy.
That is horrible. The post-mortem is holy shit. This is so dark.
It's grim.
But it's brilliant.
Great.
You know, tea time terror for tots is...
it's perfect. It's a perfect term.
It's great. I love it. It is so good. I mean, can you imagine now in Doctor Who if, you know, the Doctor turned around and found a body and said, oh, there's been a post-mortem on this.
That will save that for Torchwood.
That's it. That's a torch. Mm. That would be a Torchwood thing.
Literally, you could see people just eviscerated, being probed in different ways.
I was just about to say, I don't think that's got anything to do with the aliens.
That's just Torchwood. What did we think? Are they trying to do West Country accents, gentlemen, or what do we think there?
Oh, yeah, Ben is, isn't
ben
he?
Ben certainly is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess
Vince has a twang, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does a little bit.
Yeah, somebody will be telling us.
Always so careful.
Oh, be so careful. some dialect coach is going to tell us, actually, he's from supposed to be from Cornwall or something, but it's probably somewhere coastal down there.
Yeah, that's probably what they were thinking, weren't they?
Yeah.
They probably were thinking, oh, Cornish coast sort of thing.
Now, we always say on the review of Death, the Doctor Who story is only as good as its villains. What do we think of the Rutan in both, you know, the way it looks, the way it moves, its whole plan, you know, what's all that about?
I mean, conceptually, I think it works very well. You know, I think it's a clever idea to have a thing that is a shapeshifter. Mm. And, you know, it's sea-based because we're in a
lighthouse.
Aqua-related story. I love all that. I mean, I am sure certain people will say the Rutan looks shite.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've always liked it. Mm. You know, and I think particularly when it works, it really works. Mm. There are a few shots where you're like, oh, okay, that it hasn't quite where they've, you know, CSO'd it in, it hasn't quite matched the, you know, the stairs or
some
whatever.
Of the stuff, stuff on the staircase, especially at the end where it goes into like a jelly, that looks pretty good.
Yes.
That's good.
But I love that.
When it dies,
it's disintegrating. That's brilliant.
Yeah, that
when
looks
it's
good.
Swimming
yeah.
around when Leela first sees it, that looks good.
That looks good.
But it's all the stuff.
Basically,
when
I first watched it, I thought it was Morbius had come back.
But he sounds like Morbius. That's the thing.
It sounds like Morbius.
It's the exact
true.
Same
the voice. Yeah.
Modulation on the voice.
It sounds like Morbius. Yeah, I thought we'd be back again.
I don't really like the floating stuff. Like when he just climbs up the side of the lighthouse, it just looks a little bit like they've matted a CSO thing just onto the camera.
Right, okay.
And they're panning up the lighthouse, you know?
Oh, yeah, when Tom's hanging out.
When Tom's hanging out,
that's funny. That's good.
But, yeah, it's nice to have a reference to a Doctor Who villain that isn't in the story. Like, that's quite rare for Doctor Who at this time. We have the Sontarans mentioned, obviously.
Yeah, I think that was a clever thought, because I think Robert Holmes was the script editor still, wasn't he, on this story? So it was funny for Terrence to be like, well, you know, I made him do the Sontaran story, which he didn't want to do. So I'll do this story and I'll bring in the Rutans. Really great. I mean, yeah, it's nice to finally see them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy, really, to think that we've never had a story with a pair of them in.
Together,
I mean, Big Finish are doing their Sontarans versus Rutans thing at the moment because it's 50 years. It's 50 years since the Sontarans appeared in Doctor Who this year.
In Time Warrior.
That's fantastic.
So Big Finish.
I genuinely can't think of a better way of representing a villain on in some form medium that changes shape than on audio. But that makes perfect sense to me.
I listened to the first two and they've been all right. They've been pretty good. The poor McGowan was really good with the Sontarans.
Hang on a minute. After Once and Future, you're back on the Big Finish gravy train.
Well, I thought because it's got a Paul McGann story with Kerry's, you know, who listens to the podcast, Billy. I was like, well, you know, I've got to fill in the Paul McGann gaps. He's the only Doctor that I listen to on Big Finish with any consistency. So I was like, well, I've got to listen to Kerry's coming back with Charlie. That was really good. The Pertwee one has been okay. The Pertwee one is difficult because, you know, none of the original cast are in it because they've all died and they've all been, you know, replaced either by their children
or other people that don't sound like them. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I just like Tim Treloar's great. I think he does a good John Pertwee, but obviously it's not quite John Pertwee, but it's there enough that you can.
Yeah, I think he's great. Okay. Tim Treloar's probably my favourite, one of my favourite of the, from a performance perspective, as well as, you know, doing a decent impression of John.
Exactly. And I think John Coleshaw as the Brigadier, at times I think, oh yeah, I can really hear the Brigadier, but then at times it's like, It sounds like someone trying to sound like Nick Courtney and not quite getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Liz Sladen's daughter, Sadie, you know, she naturally sounds like her mum. But I think at times she almost sounds a bit too clipped and a bit too posh. And I'm like, oh no, I think Sarah would be a bit more, a bit more casual about certain lines, certain line delivery, but
you know. It's so difficult, isn't it?
It's hard. Oh, it's very difficult. Hard. I mean, it just made me think, it's like, maybe we just shouldn't be doing this.
I was just going
to
say.
Maybe we just shouldn't be doing this. I got to laugh at that thing that I sent you the other day about the real-time pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Documentary about, you know, let's interview Liz Sladen and Caroline John's daughters and ask them what it's like to play their mums on Big Finish.
Oh.
And it started, Nick Briggs was like, the problem with all these actors and Doctor Who dying is we can't do any more stories with them. I was like, yes, that's
the problem. Major problem.
That is the problem. Yeah, I'm sure when they died, everyone thought, oh, bugger, never going to get them on audio again. Mm. Jesus Christ.
Why
on.
Didn't someone say, Nick, can we just do
you
that
cannot
again?
Cannot say that. Yeah.
Terrible.
Maybe reword that in a way that's slightly less shit.
Oh, man. What else have we got to talk about in the story? Because I think it's just been a love-in the whole time. I can't
Nothing,
really think of
it's
anything.
So good.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else to say to criticise it.
But it's in my top 10, definitely.
Yeah, do you reckon?
Oh, God,
yeah,
definitely.
It's very
it's
good.
It's so good.
It is brilliant. It okay. is brilliant. I think the only criticism I would have...
Oh, we talked about the ending, didn't we?
The ending is a bit...
Lackluster.
A bit lackluster, yeah. Because it's like, you know, they've set up all this... There's a ship coming and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And then, you know... Tom Baker does a bit of techno waffle with a diamond and then turns the lighthouse into a laser beam, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
I think that's very clever and very ingenious. But it just sort of feels like, oh, okay, they've just like blasted this ship out of the air. And
the ship, as that fireball's a bit, you know,
I mean, I think that's obviously been improved now for the Blu-ray.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
in DWM, they showed the design of the spaceship.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, that'll be interesting to see what that looks like with the new CGI. But I'll be honest, when I was watching it the other day, I thought, as much as I want to see it with the new CGI, I'm sure the new Rutan looks great, but...
I wonder what they've done to him.
Have
you seen what...
I've seen it, yeah. Yeah. It's like a floating squid thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
They haven't changed it that much then?
Well, it is quite...
It's been updated. It's like what you would do for like a new series version of it, isn't it, really?
Mm. Yeah, like it's got an eye now and like more tentacles and stuff. Like more obvious tentacles rather than like wispy traily stuff.
Okay.
And I was watching it and I was like, I mean, I'm on board to an extent, but part of me is like, I do like this little green... practical blob, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I'll miss that a little bit if I watch it with the CGI. I'll miss the thing just like shuffling along, being pulled along on a bit
great.
Of string.
That's great. Yeah,
Johnny, what do you think of CGI replacements in kind of classic Doctor Who? Is that too much for you? Can it go too far?
I think sometimes they do it pretty well. Sometimes I think, I don't really think that was necessary. I think you could have left that as it was. Sometimes I've looked at some of them and thought, oh yeah, that was pretty good. You know, I think, for to try and get some more modern, younger people to watching these, I think maybe updating them is probably a good idea. Because as long as it doesn't detract from the story, then that's fine, really. So I'm not a Luddite there, you know, I'm quite happy to see, you know, some special effects updated. After all, I am playing Tomb Raider 1, 2 and 3 again now with new effects.
How are you finding that?
Yeah, it's great. It's good.
I love it.
Great game.
It's on my list. It's on my long list.
Oh,
it's really good.
And it's so good. You just press start and you can switch between
the
original graphics
and
the new ones. It's so good.
Oh,
yeah.
It's as easy as that.
It's so good.
It's great.
It's really cool.
Good. I really enjoyed playing.
I'm well in, I went into that. That'll be maybe birthday present, I think. Cool.
Get it for sure. It's so good.
And I think just going on what you're saying about special effects, I think the best example of it being done well is again in season 15 with the Invasion of Time. How they've sorted out the Vardens.
Oh, yes.
Because the Vardens obviously look like the absolute crap in the original series, in the original version.
Mm.
And now just to give them some sort of physical entity that looks sort of humanoid and doesn't just look like a bit of shimmering shite.
Mm.
It works so much better. And I think that elevates that story for me because it was always a story that I could just never get into.
Mm,
and when I watched it for the first time with the new CGI, I was like, actually, I can.
Great.
The door has now opened for me on this story as Billy quickly notes down on his spreadsheet.
It's been on there for ages.
I was
double checking that it was.
is that another one you're going to do? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's on there. Shall we?
And the very ending, just to interject.
Yes.
With her eyes changing. That's a lovely little.
Yeah.
That is really nice.
Part. Yeah.
Very cleverly done.
Yeah.
And
I like that.
It's like an odd sort of thing. The companions don't really get kind of personal. I mean, that to say that's growth and development in a Doctor Who companion kind of shows how little there was in the classic series. But it's nice that she gets that little sort of thing at the end of the story. It's not all doom and gloom. There is a little bit of brightness at the end there.
She can see properly now for a start.
Exactly. Louise Jameson isn't in constant agony. Now, I wanted to come
back. And Tom doing that little monologue at the end is lovely as well.
Yes. Yeah.
He's good at his monologues,
very
Tom.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's just got the voice for it, hasn't he?
Yeah, it works so...
Do you remember when Tom was the speaking clock?
Yes. Yeah, for a little while, wasn't he?
I don't remember that. When was that?
Yeah, he did. Didn't he do it for a little stint?
Did he?
A stint where he did it.
Oh, great. I'd have been on all the time.
Yeah.
There was something... Wasn't it... You could, like, if you texted a message to a home landline, he would read it
that
out
was
in
it.
His voice.
Yeah, he would read it out to you. Yeah.
Wow, would he?
Yeah.
Knickers off when I get home, love. I've got some thoughts and feelings from the Rodders because I've written something down here, Johnny, that I think we should go through with you now that you're here, because we need to use your time preciously before you go over to mass there, father. So I'm going to say that Nikki says one of my favorites, just love the atmosphere. Dave Jarvu says it's always been up there with Pyramids of Mars and Talons of Wang Chang for me as the pinnacles of Tom Baker's run. He just seems in his element and natural environment within the late Victorian period and Edwardian England.
Yeah.
Quintessential Gothic horror. Again, gets the Gothic horror tag, but it's not actually part of that period. You know, it's weird.
No.
Jamie Brett Baker.
I guess it's just so synonymous with the programme at that time.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Precisely, yeah. And I mean, Jamie Bate even says, credit to this one unfairly is given to Hinchcliffe. This is Graham Williams' take on Gothic horror. And he delivers. I'd argue it's stronger than the Hinchcliffe stuff, if only because it's not a sausage fest for once. Adelaide is great. Pure class from start to finish.
Very good, yeah.
And it's just a
maybe this is
love.
Graham's way of trying to get the audience, like, I'll do one of Phillips style to get them in the season.
Yeah.
And then, I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's not a bad shout, actually.
Don't know.
It is interesting, looking at the way that series is laid out, is like you get the Gothic horror, then you get a bit of something else, you get the Invisible Enemy, then you go back to the Gothic horror, almost there's like an ease back in for audiences with and Image of the Fendal, and then you get the Sunmakers and Underworld, and we wonder why we did this. never mind. Right. Johnny, I want to ask you a question, which I don't think we've ever asked you before on the podcast.
Oh dear.
You have time to deliberate over this, all right?
Right.
Don't have to accept your first answers. You can workshop this between all three of us. What are your top 10 favourite Doctor Who stories of all time?
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Have we not? Sure, we did this years ago.
We did do this years ago.
I remember talking about this over the phone. You rang me up.
Yeah, I can remember. But this is a long time ago. So
that was a long time ago. Yeah. And I mean, I want to think that they've changed. I don't think they have. But I would like to know
them again. So my top 10.
Yes.
So I'm not going to say one because I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But I'll just give you the top 10.
In any order.
Yeah.
In any order.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll say... Pyramids of Mars, Brain of Morbius, Remembrance of the Daleks, Horror Fang Rock, Caves of Androzani, Genesis of the Daleks, that's six. Talons of Wang Chiang, seven.
I've definitely
missed
one. Sea Devils,
eight. Two more.
Did you say the Curse of Fenric earlier?
No.
Okay.
Tomb of the Cybermen.
Yeah.
Nine. And then I will go with... I'll go with Fenric. Go on then.
Fenric. I love it. Okay.
Yeah, why not?
It's nice to get it officially recorded just so that people know.
I mean, you know, there is
room for...
Yeah, there's room for, you know...
Swapping some out.
You know, yeah, if you say, yeah, I mean, what's the best one ever? Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, good ones aren't there. I mean, I like Brain of Morbius very much. That's probably going to be in the top three for me.
Yeah.
I love Morbius. I love Primitives of Mars as well. So many good ones. Hard to say.
Mm.
So hard to say. But that's probably mostly Tom, as you can see from that list.
I can see Tom. I can see from that list, yeah.
Matt's is probably quite similar.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, like, there wouldn't be any of those you're moving out, are there?
Not really. Yeah, I mean, they're all up there, aren't they, really? I guess. Deadly Assassin, Pyramid.
Oh, Deadly Assassin! I didn't say that. Sorry.
Oh, shit.
I just forgot. Kick Fenric out and put Deadly Assassin in. Sorry, I love Deadly Assassin.
Okay.
What, yes. Did you say Robots of Death?
Fenric, I didn't know.
See, this is it.
Robots of Death. Right, I'm not going to change anymore. I put Assassin above Robots of Death. I love Robots of Death, though. But yeah, I'll leave it like that. But I do love... Oh, it's so difficult.
It is so difficult.
I knew that this was going to be a good question because there were going to be loads that were going to crop up. And, you know, if we say The Green Death, if we say...
I know, it's a great,
you know,
yeah,
Inferno,
it's a great story.
You know, Spearhead.
Oh, I love
you
Inferno.
Know, chucking all these ones out.
Yeah, there's so many good ones.
It's hard. Did somebody ask you this question? Did
no,
they want
I
to
was
know
just
what we
genuinely
thought?
Intrigued because...
Oh, you wanted to know, okay.
I knew that this was going to be in there. And I could guess probably five of the others. In fact, I could probably guess all of them. But I wanted to hear them from you because, you
from
know,
me now.
It's nice to establish it. It would be good to know if you could rustle up your top five, I'll give you, favourite new series stories.
You can remember the names? I couldn't even tell you the names of them.
We'll help you.
So that is... I can't do that today. That will give me a headache.
Power. It's too early in the morning.
It was hard enough thinking of the... Well, not hard enough. It was easy thinking of the top 10. But, you know, I can't think of top five. Top five new series ones. It's all going to be early Doors stuff. So it's going to be things like Empty Child.
Yeah.
Is that a two-parter?
Yeah.
Doctor Dances.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be in there. That's a great story. Dalek is a great story. Father's Day, I really like as well. These are all Eccleston ones.
Yeah.
That's four. Let's see if I can think of a David Tennant one. Well, I suppose I could pick one of. I do like the Star Beast was great.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that story. That was so good.
Really, is that going to go in your top five?
Well, I don't know. It's pretty good. Like I really
don't
enjoyed that story.
This
I've
is
watched
progress.
It a few times.
Yeah.
This is progress.
I like that story. It was good. I mean, I'll go with that for now.
Wow.
It's hard, isn't it?
Interesting.
It's hard.
Yeah. Matt, what about you? Come on. Like, I know we've probably done
top
this.
Top five?
Yeah, top five, but are you like Johnny?
God.
Have any of the more recent stories jumped in that for you?
Oh, I don't know, actually. I mean, Wild Blue Yonder was really good.
Oh, that was a very good story. Yeah,
that was really good.
I did
enjoy that a lot. Dalek's definitely up there. Empty Child's definitely up there. Midnight is up there. I really do like Father's Day as well, to be honest.
Mm, really
I don't know. Would it go in my top five? I don't know. Oh, God. Difficult. Very difficult. Possibly Wild Blue Yonder.
Yeah.
I wouldn't...
I tell you what I would add as well. But if we're doing top 10, that two-parter when Rose leaves with David Tennant, that's a good story.
Doomsday
and...
Yes.
Is that two-parter? When she goes, that's sad. Yeah, I can't talk about that.
Why had I never thought of this before? I'm glad you said that, Johnny. So let's do, at some point later this year, let's do that two-parter with you, because... I don't think we've ever got you to do a new series story that isn't like current
new
series.
No, we haven't actually. No. Yeah.
I'll do that one. I'll have to watch that. Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah.
That would be really interesting.
Mm. It was worth dragging him on today.
Always. Just to book him in for next time.
Get up at 7:15 in the morning for this.
Thank you. We thank you. Everybody thanks you. Everybody loves
that's
you.
That's all right. Oh, that's so fine. On my weekend.
Don't I know it? I was jotting mine down there, and I think Father's Day... I would actually say Wild Blue Yonder as a top five. And then yeah, I've good. Also got Bad Wolf Parting of the Ways and
very good finale.
Human Nature Family of Blood as well.
Oh, that's great, that one. Yeah, I put that in my top 10, those two. They are good, yeah.
Yeah.
We should do another sort of, trying to work out our... Because everybody loved the tier list, so it's sort of like, what can we do where we sort of put our flags in the ground? We make our statement of like, we think, the kind of standard bearers of Doctor Who, especially as the show is due to come back. And we've talked about it a lot before, but obviously the Disney Plus audience is going to want to know. You know, we've done what we think are the best of all time, but, you know, and where to start. But yeah, we'll be going over all ground again. We've done all those videos before. We're running out of ideas, folks.
Yeah. Great. Put your ideas in the comments below and like and subscribe while you're at it.
Oh, dear. Well, I think that might be it. What do you think?
I think so. Yeah, right. I think so. I think, you know, at the end of the day,
what's not to like?
What's not to like? What's not to like? Yeah, I think if you don't like this story, do you not understand Doctor Who? Mm. I mean, this is what our dad would call proper Doctor Who.
Yeah, he would. Yeah,
that's what
my dad
would
say. Exactly the same thing. He'd use exactly those words.
Yeah.
Doctor Who. Yeah.
Yeah, he would, you know, if the new series had been on and we'd been watching that and then we'd go back and watch an old one, he'd come in and he'd go, now this is proper Doctor Who. This is proper Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I think that's it. It's just proper Doctor Who, you know, quintessential. You know,
the thing is,
potatoes.
I watched that story the other night with Matt and, I just loved the whole thing. We watched two episodes one night, didn't we? And it goes so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so good. It's so good. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
they don't make them like this anymore.
I didn't look at my watch thinking, how long left?
Yeah. So, yeah.
And I do that a lot.
And sometimes, I do that with the new series. I do look.
I have to be honest.
Yeah. Sometimes I think. I look at it more thinking, how the fuck are they going to wrap this up in 5 minutes?
Yes. That too. That too. Mm. Yeah. It's a mixture of the two when looking at the watch and the new stuff. But it's just brilliant. Brilliant story.
Yeah.
So what we've learned from this, finally getting around to doing this story after 10 years of discussions, is that the review of Death remains the same. We hate modern Doctor Who and we love old Doctor Who. And we're terrified of what's to come. That's the world we live in. Thanks very much for watching, ladies and gents. We haven't changed at all. And thanks very much for watching, folks. Home and,
What are we doing next time, Billy?
Next time, we're going to do Aliens of London World War III.
Is it? Oh, I thought we had a Pertwee, or is that the one after?
Things did get a little shuffled around. We've got Ambassadors of Death coming up, but we've just done a classic, I think we need to get a new series one going there.
Fine, I think that's fair.
Yeah, so Aliens of London World War III is the one. Johnny, we'll obviously see you again in the near future to talk about the gobshite that we have on the television. We will get you back to talk about Aliens, Army of Ghosts and Doomsday, because that's going
to
be really
interesting.
I'm happy
to do that one. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Very good. Well, in that case, see you next time for Flatulent Aliens. That's outside of ourselves, not including us. Right. See you then.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.